Oh, good afternoon. Welcome to Yeast Nutrition in Non-Malt Fermentations. My name is Jason Smith. I am the art director at the Brewers Association and the American Homebrewers Association, and I am here to introduce you all to Chris, who is going to be doing this talk here. To start off, you've probably heard this bunch today already, but make sure phones are either off or silenced. Also, at the end, we're going to have a little Q&A session. If you do have a question, please come up to the microphone over here because this is being recorded and we want to make sure that your questions are recorded as well. After the session, please make sure that you check out our archives of all of our sessions. There's well over 400 recordings of sessions that you can access. And then also through the app, go and give some feedback about this session so that ourselves, the governing committee, and Chris knows how things went. So now I'd like to briefly introduce Chris Bernardo. Works with the research and development team at Omega Yeast as the innovation brewer, where he helps turn lab experiments into practical brewing knowledge. So without further ado, here's Chris, and enjoy.
Thanks, Jason. That's me. I'm Chris Bernardo. I'm the R&D or innovation brewer at Omega Yeast. Innovation brewer is kind of a weird title that I have to explain, that I actually just work with the R&D department. Just a quick introduction about myself. I've been homebrewing since 2010, and just like a lot of other homebrewers, I had that fleeting thought of, hey, I could probably go pro with this, and then it turned into a not fleeting thought, and I went pro. So I started brewing at a brewery in Chicago in 2017, was hired on as a production technician in 2018 with Omega Yeast. Prior to that, I was a tech boy. I did network security and system automation, and this job is much, much better. So just a little bit about what we're going to be going through. We're going to do some nutrient overviews, yeast considerations, taking a look at our study, comparing nutrient types and yeast strains, fermentation management, and post-fermentation and consideration. So, just real quick, what are we looking for when we're talking about goals for hard seltzer fermentation? You're looking for clean fermentation, one that avoids all flavors, the big ones, sulfur, diacetyl, fusel alcohols, acetaldehyde, and yeast meaty from lysis of cells. You want it to be fast. You want it to be complete, generally with seltzer fermentations and healthy yeast pitch, enough yeast nutrient, enough oxygenation. You're looking at a real degree of fermentation of greater than 95%. You want it to be colorless, like our favorite seltzer, White Claw. And you want it to be clear, appearance of water. Again, White Claw, the industry standard for seltzers. So as beer brewers, well, just brewers in general, most of us beer brewers, we're extremely spoiled when it comes to yeast nutritional needs. Wort will provide like 95% of the nutrition that you'll need. You could get by with a healthy yeast pitch, healthy oxygenation, and like making sure it's not a super high gravity fermentation. Wine and cider, you're a little bit luckier. You still need about 4/10 grams per liter of nutrient to get through with a healthy fermentation. Hard seltzer, specifically what we use, dextrose monohydrate washes, which is pretty standard. You get no yeast nutrition or no nutritional value for yeast, so you need to supplement your nutrition with blended nutrients or organic nutrients. This is just a study that we did about how poorly sugar ferments alone. So as you see, without nutrients, you got about a 2 bricks drop, whereas with nutrients, you're at -1.6. So you definitely need nutrients for sugar washes. So let's take a look at what nutrients you need for a healthy fermentation. At the top, they're all super important. Don't skimp on any of them. But at the top, you have your B vitamins, your biotin, your various B vitamins. Just like the human body, like you need the B vitamins to stay healthy. They helps with healthy fermentations, healthy yeast growth. lipids, so fatty acids and sterols. Most of this is coming from organic yeast forms, so like that's important for daughter cell reproduction, healthy reproduction. Elements such as potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, manganese, calcium, zinc, all that helps with metabolic functions such as alcohol or ethanol dehydrogenase. And then one of the biggest components that you need is nitrogen, which comes in two forms, organic nitrogen, which comes from cell or yeast autolysates or inactivated yeast, and inorganic nitrogen, which comes from most commonly DAP, which we're all probably familiar with. So let's talk about nitrogen, since it is a major requirement for healthy fermentations. We measure nitrogen as in beer as FAN, so free amino nitrogen. For the most part, you're going to have enough nitrogen in wort, so a 10 to 12 plate of wort will contain 150 to 200 ppm of FAN, which is enough for a healthy fermentation for a reasonably gravity beer. Wine and seltzer, we measure that by yeast assimilable nitrogen, which is YAN. And again, wine and seltzers, you need some extra help when it comes to healthy fermentations. So as a baseline requirement, you need about 1 ppm of YAN for every 10th degree Plato. So for example, if you have a 10 Plato sugar wash or a 10 Plato wort, you need 100 ppm of YAN. If you have an 18 Plato, you need 180 ppm of YAN. So let's talk about where we're getting some of these nutrients and whatnot. Yeast-derived nutrients are just inactivated yeast or yeast autolysates, and they provide a lot of the nitrogen that you need, a lot of the elements, lipids, and vitamins that you need for healthy fermentation and healthy yeast growth during fermentation. The components of inactivated yeast are the yeast extracts, which contains all the peptides, aminos, vitamins, and elements for your metabolic functions. And the hulls, which contains the lipids, sterols, and cell wall for healthy cell duplication. So let's take a look at the main categories of nutrients available. On the left, you have your autolysis, which we just talked about. It should contain everything that you need for a healthy fermentation, vitamins, lipids, elements, yeast assimilable nitrogen. Whereas blended nutrients, otherwise known as your inorganic, which contains the inorganic nitrogen that you need for a healthy fermentation. It'll be a blend of B vitamins, yeast hulls from autolysates most likely, salts, so all your, your manganese, zinc, magnesium for enzymatic and metabolic functions, and your inorganic DAP. So here we have a list of, I'm pretty sure, all of the commercially available yeast nutrients. In the green box, you have your blended nutrients, and as you see, it has each of the components available in them. Taking a look at proper seltzer, because that's what I'm most familiar with, the inorganic nitrogen form is DAP. The organic nitrogen form is the autolysates. Minerals and trace elements, it says proprietary, but it's kind of what you assume it is, zinc, your magnesiums, manganese, everything you need for metabolic functions. Your lipids are coming from the inactivated yeast or the autolysates, and then our vitamins, it's also kind of what you assume, biotins, various vitamin B vitamins for healthy fermentations. At the bottom, in the blue box, you have your autolysates, which is inactivated yeast. All the inactivated yeast will provide you everything that you need for healthy fermentation. So what are we looking for when we're selecting a hard seltzer yeast? Hard seltzer yeast is really just an alcohol-tolerant yeast strain. So wine yeast, distiller's yeast, beer yeast, bioethanol. And what you're looking for is a low nutrient demand because seltzers, again, require an artificial nutrient addition. You need a low pH tolerance. Fermentations drop your pH, and seltzers have no buffering capacities, but blended nutrients generally will have some sort of buffering capacity. A high ABV tolerance, flavor, you want a clean, low ester flavor profile, and you want something that ferments fast, because faster is better. Here we have a test that we ran, we dosed a bunch of different plates with different levels of ammonia, different levels of various nutrients and whatnot, and we introduced yeast to see how they grew. So what this essentially is showing is no matter what yeast you're using, it's going to have different nutritional needs. So it's sort of up to you to decide what nutrition works best for your yeast strain. If you have a preferred yeast strain that you need to use, you need to run some tests to figure out what works best for you. If you have a house yeast strain for pro brewers, or you just have something that you banked with yourself, one nutrient might not work best for you. So let's take a look at a study comparing nutrient types and yeast strains. So how we came to all these conclusions is we took our blended nutrient and a yeast autolysate and mixed it up with, we fermented out with 8 different yeast strains just to see how they performed. So with the blended nutrient, we used West Coast Ale 1, the Chico strain, British Ale 5, a couple of Kvike strains, so Hothead Kvike, Lutra Kvike, and then a cask conditioning yeast, a champagne yeast, a wine yeast, and a distilling yeast. So the setup went, we did a 15-degree Plato dextrose wash. We added our recommended dosing rate of 1.5 grams per liter of each nutrient at flame out, with a standard ale pitching rate of 1 million cells per degree, or 1 million cells per milliliter per degree Plato. We tracked our 200 mil fermentations by weight loss. We measured pH, the degrees of fermentation, and then we ran it through our GC machine to test for what aromatic compounds were coming through fermentation. So as you see, this just goes to demonstrate you can't really go wrong with autolysates or blended nutrients when it comes to a healthy fermentation. Again, the kinetics are very similar over the course of 10 days. As you can see, some yeast strains perform better with autolysates, some perform better with blended nutrients, but you're generally going to get to a terminal gravity with either an autolysates or a blended nutrient. Let me point out, all that is true with the exception of Chico, which apparently does not like autolysates. This is just showing a graph of preferred nutrient strain combinations. So again, some strains just work better with different nutrient combinations. So Lallemand's wine yeast worked really well with a blended nutrient, whereas Seyfel's distiller yeast worked well with a yeast autolysate. Chico, again, hates yeast autolysates for some reason. But again, can't go wrong with either autolysates or blended nutrients, depending on what yeast strain you're using. Just another graph of the gravity measurements over 10 days really points out how much Chico hates autolysates. But generally, you're seeing over 99 degrees of fermentation with a optimal nutrient yeast blend. So just to show real degrees of fermentation, so preferred strain and nutrient combinations. So we took an average of how well autolysates performed versus blended nutrient. You're seeing an 86% degree of fermentation or attenuation with autolysates, whereas blended nutrients, you're getting a 91.8 degree. The big difference between yeast autolysates and blended nutrients is blended nutrients contain buffering capacity. So since fermentations drop pH, a blended nutrient's natural buffering capacity prevents it from dropping down to like 3.6, which is like high end for a sour beer. So the one bonus that a blended nutrient has, you don't have to buffer it with bicarbonates or anything. So what we got from our sensory evaluation is which yeast performed the best for a seltzer. So the most neutral yeast strains that we had were our distiller's yeast, our Lutra Kvike yeast, and a wine yeast. And then West Coast Ale 1, British Ale 5, Hothead Kvike, champagne yeast, and bottling conditioning yeast all had incomplete or some off flavors, mostly to do, not just off flavors, flavors in general, since you want a clean tasting seltzer. Most had to do with esters. Some performed really poorly with certain nutrient combinations, which caused off flavors. We mostly see sulfur when it comes to seltzer off flavors. These are graphs of yeast aroma volatiles remaining at low sensory thresholds, showing benefits to both nutrient choices. So you're looking for clean, fast fermentations with low flavors and off flavors when you're trying to ferment out a seltzer. Both nutrient choices showed low levels of fusel alcohols with healthy optimal fermentations. Ethyl acetate was really low, which is just general esters. Acetaldehyde was one of our bigger problems, which comes from poor nutrients, poor fermentations. Just the acetaldehyde doesn't have the power to reabsorb back into the yeast cells because of poor nutrient additions. So we put together our in-house optimal nutrient and yeast combination using our proper seltzer nutrient and dosing it with our Lutrikovig. And we tested it at different gravities just to see how dosing rate affects given higher gravity seltzers. And we found some correlation between doubling up the gravities and doubling up the dosage rates. So as you see, we did three washes at 10-degree Play-Doh, 15-degree Play-Doh, and 25-degree Play-Doh. And between 10 and 25-degree Play-Doh, we reached terminal over the course of 7 days with just a double dosage, even though it's 2.5 times. And we found that to be consistent with a lot of really, really high fermentation seltzer washes. And all of these were pitched with just a regular ale pitching rate of 1 million cells per degree, or 1 million cells per milliliter per degree Play-Doh. They all finished out terminal with low off flavors, real clean beers, or real clean seltzers, and a high degree of fermentation. So what can we conclude from what we studied? They all say one. My bad. So yeast autolysates and blended nutrients are both suited for fast and reliable hard seltzer fermentations. It's recommended that you trial your specific yeast strains and several nutrients as their nutritional needs may vary. And autolysates will impart flavor and color, where blended nutrients with lower amounts of yeast-derived products may offer a more neutral sensory to the finished product. So in my opinion, always go with a blended nutrient over an autolysate. But if autolysates are readily available to you, they will 100% work. You just need to take a little bit more care when it comes to buffering your seltzers. And with the understanding that it will impart some flavors and some more color. So let's talk about fermentation management. A lot of this, as brewers, you know what happens with poor fermentations. But in terms of adding nutrients, if you add too much nutrient, it favors biomass, you're going to have really healthy fermentations. That yeast is going to compete with the nutrients, and you may end up with a bad fermentation. Your pH drop is going to drop maybe too much. Off flavors, you're going to get some meaty off flavors that comes from lysis of cell walls and the cells bursting and releasing their guts into your seltzer. Microbial instability and color clarity issues. Not enough nutrients, you're going to have incomplete fermentations, some off flavors such as sulfur and diacetyl, just because, again, healthy fermentations help take care of a lot of off flavors. You're going to get low biomass and your poor yeast health. So how do you encourage fermentation? Staggered nutrient additions do work, especially for high gravity seltzer fermentations. We recommend doing, especially for double dosing your seltzer fermentations, we recommend doing your standard hot side addition, and before it gets to about 30% attenuation, throw in another dose, because by 30%, your nitrogen source will be depleted, and nitrogen is what's going to help you achieve a really healthy, strong fermentation. So for regular fermentation, if you're going to split your nutrients, don't double up on your nutrients either. Split the recommended dose in two. And again, lower inorganic nitrogen at start to encourage organic nitrogen uptake. That's essentially just saying you're going to run out of nitrogen, add more nitrogen to help encourage the fermentation. Aeration. Seltzers have low oxidative compounds, so you don't have to be super concerned about oxidizing your seltzer. So 24 hours after knockout, if you see fermentation stalls, just blast it with some CO2, give your fermenter a good shake, get the yeast resuspended and starting up again. Again, you can rouse with CO2 or circulation. Don't add nutrients to stuck fermentation. You're going to have those off flavors. You're going to have yeast competing for those nutrients, leading to more biomass. And if the fermentation starts low, add a buffer to bring the fermentation pH back up. Some tips to buffering your fermentation. The yeast fermentation, just to speak a little bit about pH, yeast fermentation lowers the pH by removing ammonium ions, adds carbonic acids and organic acids. It's a stress response by yeast. It lessens your nitrogen uptake. And some readily available buffers in case you're seeing your pHs drop for any reason, calcium carbonate and potassium bicarbonate will help bring your pH back up. So we internally realized that doing high-gravity seltzer fermentations result in low ester profile. This is really helpful for a couple reasons. You save your space by making a concentrated base, a little more applicable in pro-brewing, but could also help in home-brewing, just to have extra fermenters available for you. And once you dilute that base to bring it back down to a regular gravity seltzer, you get a lot smoother, cleaner seltzer. So we do recommend starting with a higher gravity base, following our guidelines of doubling your dosage, and then diluting afterwards. It helps with clarity, it helps with flavor, it helps save space, and the tank or fermentation turnaround time is relatively similar to a regular gravity seltzer. So yeast pitching considerations. Again, it's consistent with beer, so 1 million cells per milliliter per degree Plato. Again, with high gravity seltzer fermentation, we found that a regular pitching rate is sufficient to get to terminal with low off flavors in 7 days. Repitching, it's possible, but you have to make sure that your fermentation is optimal. So healthy yeast, healthy nutrients, a good amount of oxygen. You should be able to repitch a few generations with seltzer. Unfortunately, in hard seltzer fermentations, you're only going to see about 2 times the fermentation volume. So repitching, you're only going to get so far before those daughter cells become too weak to be viable for another fermentation. As soon as you see fermentation's complete, you want to rack off and then clean that yeast, whatever your yeast repitching process is, rack straight onto that yeast, whatever you want to do to harvest that yeast. And just to see, yeast slurry is just yeast. It'll be less, but with a higher cell concentration. So the daughter cells are, as you repitch generation to generation, are going to be weaker. If the nutrient doesn't provide zinc, supplement zinc when repitching, and avoid reusing yeast from high ABV seltzers because it's already a naturally stressful environment for yeast. So post-fermentation considerations. So best practices to avoid clarity and color issues. Don't cool or crash too early and let the fermentation settle out. When adding the nutrient, cool as quickly as possible to minimize color development. Just side note to that, cooling after you're done pitching in your nutrient is also really helpful in preserving as much of the nitrogen as you need. You're going to essentially kill off some of that nitrogen if you're not cooling fast enough, restricting the amount of nitrogen available for your fermentation. It leads to off flavors such as sulfur and acetaldehyde. Yeast removal, pick a ale yeast that flocks really well. Centrifuge, I don't know how many of you have a centrifuge. We also don't have a centrifuge at Omega. To be fair, they also terrify me. Don't get a centrifuge. And color flavor removal. Everyone keeps asking, how does White Claw, sorry to keep referencing White Claw, I do love it, black cherry is the best. Everyone keeps asking, how do they get it so clear? They're carbon filtering. So, as you see here, water is clear as water. A blended nutrient versus an autolysate fermentation. They're not crystal clear. If you really want to go through trouble, pour it through a Brita filter. I don't know what other carbon carbon filter options there are out there other than a Brita filter for the capacity that we're homebrewing at. But, you know, you're going to get the job done without carbon filtering either, especially if you're adding fruit and juice, which a lot of people are doing to their seltzers. So juice puree adds 1% to 4% of fermentable sugar and adds up to 2 to 8 volumes of CO2 to the finished product. So I'm sure we all know this already, but I'll go over it just for posterity. You could add it to a primary fermentation with a yeast nutrient during primary fermentation and let the sugars naturally ferment out. What we do is we add potassium sorbate or metabisulfate, just some sort of chemical to restrict fermentation. Sorbistat K is also a really good one. Velcorin's a good one. Or you could pasteurize, which, you know, you could pasteurize. But on the homebrew scale, it would be a little easier with no oxidative compounds in seltzer to pasteurize, but don't pasteurize beer on our scale. So that's it for me. Sorry I spoke really fast. It was a lot to cover. But if you have any questions, now is the time. Or you can email me if you're too shy. Oh, if you want to go to the microphone.
I attended this not realizing it was about seltzer.
Oh, great.
I saw non-mash conversions, and I immediately thought like bourbon mashes. Can you speak to any of the, you know, overlap between something like a seltzer production versus a whiskey conversion of primarily corn?
I'm actually not super familiar with distilling, but presumably you're using a higher gravity mash. Correct? I don't know. I'm not 100% sure about. Yeah. So if you're using a higher gravity, you can supplement pretty much any of the blended nutrients as a nutrient addition because it's going to have everything that you need to continue a healthy fermentation. So as I mentioned earlier, especially for high gravity fermentations, it would be super beneficial for you to add the recommended dose for your fermentation at flame out, and then a few days after primary has started, adding the second round of nutrient just to have that extra nitrogen uptake required for a healthy fermentation. Yeah.
I apologize. My question is also not about seltzer.
That's okay. I'll answer as best I can. I'm not just a seltzer guy.
But it's related. So in the mead world, there has been commentary by some mead judges lately that there's a little bit of an epidemic of folks adding too much nutrient to like 5% and 6% and 7% hydromels.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw in your talk, awesome talk, that you did comment on the addition of off flavors, not from over-pitching, but from adding too much nutrient. Could you dive into a little bit more detail on where where different yeasts sort of have to come along with too much nutrient, and they probably shouldn't be used at all for these types of fermentations?
Yeah, so I mean, if I understand your question correctly, mead, I believe, should still have some of the nutritional value that they eat, that you need for a healthy fermentation without too much nutrient. Kind of. Would you say it's closer to ciders? Yeah, so in that case, my assumption would be that they're using a seltzer nutrient addition rate for meads. So since mead already has a pre-existing nutritional value to it, it's probably at about 40% nutritional value needed for seltzer nutrient additions. So I would half that dosage for mead fermentation. Just again, if you're introducing too much nutrient to a fermentation, that yeast is going to compete for that nutrient. You're going to get too much biomass, and that could lead to, like, for one, the depletion of the nutrients, which causes off flavors, especially acetaldehyde and diacetyl. They won't have that healthy amount of nitrogen to reabsorb the acetaldehyde or diacetyl. And then on top of that, having that much biomass could lead to lysis of those cell walls, which will lead to the meaty off flavor.
Two questions. One should be hopefully quick. You mentioned that adding nutrients, especially like nitrogen, and then boiling it can maybe denature or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So if you could go into that just a little bit. And then secondly, to kind of follow up on the meat question, in meat making, there's a lot of very strong thoughts about different nutrient additions. And you did mention in your talk already a bit about staggered nutrient additions. So if you wouldn't mind wading into that, on even, you know, mead or any kind of fermentation that has a high nutrient requirement and staggered nutrient additions.
Sure. So let's talk about the staggered nutrient additions first. So again, with mead, ciders, and wines, they already have a natural amount of nutrient available. But for high gravity fermentations, staggering the nutrient really comes from the depletion of nitrogen during that first really vigorous active stage of fermentation. So during that active fermentation, nitrogen is being used, and adding another burst of nitrogen to continue that active fermentation to help mitigate for the high degree of the high gravity is what I would recommend for high seltzer fermentation, beer fermentations too, wine, cider, mead fermentations.
How is that different than all
at once? It's the nitrogen uptake. So if you toss it all at the very, very beginning of fermentation, all that yeast is going to compete for that same nitrogen, and then there won't be any left over to continue the healthy fermentation. It's about the continuity of your fermentation strength. And I blacked out. What was the first question?
Denaturing of nitrogen.
Oh. So just like a lot of like compounds, like nitrogen can go through like Maillard reactions, which will caramelize the nitrogen, making it hard for yeast to consume, essentially. So you're essentially, if you're knocking out, adding your nitrogen and not cooling super fast, you're going to caramelize that nitrogen and essentially render it useless for fermentation. Yeah.
So is that a bad idea?
I can't really speak to those because they may actually put more DAP in than we do, but it is safer to, how do you put this? It's safer to add it to the end of boil if the DAP will be introduced or if the DAP will be fully integrated into it. Because it leaves less room for those reactions to happen. So really, even if you are doing it 5 minutes before the end of boil, the key is cooling and chilling as fast as you can. Toss two immersion chillers in there if you have to. If you don't have a counterflow or anything, toss it in an ice bath with a counterflow or with an immersion chiller. The key is chilling as fast as possible. Any other questions? You're all doing so good with the microphone. I'm so proud of everyone.
So is there any water chemistry considerations to use when making seltzers? Like the amount of calcium needed or anything?
We don't do any water chemistry additions. We've used RO water and Chicago's water, which is a pretty standard water base. I think it's a little low on calcium, and we found little to no difference in. All that does is, you know, some places are high in chlorine, just boil off the chlorine before you even start anything. Some places will have a little more sulfur, but at the end of the day, those nutrients are just going to add to the nutritional value of your fermentation. If anything, the zinc and the manganese and all that adds to it. A lot of the off flavors from nutrient additions are coming from the nitrogen itself. So, not a huge deal with seltzer fermentation. If you can get RO water, I recommend that. But we haven't found anything internally about huge detriments to not using RO water or distilled water. Any other questions? Cool. Well, thank you for coming. I hope you picked something up from that. If you're too shy to ask a question, I'm also at the booth and wandering around. And thanks so much.